promises to keep. Turning to page 46 and 47. Our family was complete 2 years later when my brother David was born on November 14, 1952. Luckily, Dad was in New York. He'd been at the hospital for the births of Jackie and me, and didn't plan to miss the birth of his third child either. After the Dodgers lost to the Cardinals, Dad rushed from Ebbets Field to Doctor's Hospital in time for David's birth. Mom got sick and couldn't go home from the hospital with David. A family friend, Willette Bailey, came to stay with us at this point. She planned to stay until my mother was well, but ended up living with us until my brothers and I were out of the house. Each March, we traveled with Mom to Florida for spring training and the exhibition games. Since Jim Crow laws were still in effect, we stayed at a motel in the black community while the other Dodger families stayed in a luxurious beach hotel across town. I was too young to know the difference, but my parents resented being treated differently. Eventually, the Dodgers brought their own facility in Vero Beach, where black players and white players and their families stayed together. Pictures on page 46 in the upper left-hand side. The caption read, "That's me on the left, David in the middle, and Jackie Jr. on the right." And the picture on the bottom of page 46, the caption reads, "Mom stayed at home with us when Dad traveled during the season. Even though he was very good at writing us letters and calling daily, we missed him." Keep in mind that this was before email, nationally televised games, and 24-hour television sports stations. The picture that dominates page 47, the caption reads, "With three growing children, Dad and Mom decided to build us a home in the country. In the fall of 1954, we moved from an integrated neighborhood in Queens, New York, where we lived across the street from Roy Campanella and his family. He was a fellow Dodger. We moved to an all-white community in Stamford, Connecticut." Turning to page 48 and 49. By the time I was five, Dad had been playing with the Brooklyn Dodgers for 10 years. During that time, he'd helped the team reach the World Series 6 times. In 1949, he led the league in batting with a .342 average and received the National League's Most Valuable Player Award. From 1947 to 1953, Dad ranked 4th in the majors in batting average, .319, 2nd in runs, .773, and 1st in stolen bases, .166. Of his nearly 5,000 career at-bats, 51% were from the cleanup slot. The 1955 Brooklyn Dodgers had the best season. After yearly disappointments of losing the World Championship to the New York Yankees, the Dodgers and my dad won the World Series. "Wait till next year," their annual mantra, finally meant victory. The picture on the bottom of page 48, the caption reads, "My father's entrance into Major League Baseball opened up this world for other black players. The Cleveland Indians brought Larry Doby up a few months after Dad broke the color barrier. Don Newcomb, who's pictured in the center, and Roy Campanella, who's pictured on the right, and Joe Black eventually became members of the Brooklyn Dodgers. The integration period within Major League Baseball ran from 1947 to 1956. The last team to bring a black player into their club was the Boston Red Sox." The picture on the bottom of page 49, the caption reads, "The 1955 Brooklyn Dodgers won the team's first and only world championship." Turning to page 50 and 51. A civil rights champion. After the 1956 baseball season, it was clear that things had changed. Branch Rickey had left the Dodgers, and at age 37, Dad had passed his peak playing days. On December 13, 1956, the Brooklyn Dodgers announced that my father had been traded to their rival, the New York Giants. Dad played along with the news of the trade, saying he'd give the Giants all that he had to give. The truth was, my father was aware that his baseball playing days were almost over. In anticipation of his retirement, he was investigating other opportunities. As the Dodgers announced the trade, my father stepped up his negotiations with a coffee manufacturer and restaurant chain, Chock Full of Nuts, for a career outside of baseball. News of the trade sent baseball fans into an uproar. Angry letters poured into the Dodgers' offices and into our home. The trade hit us hard, too. Dad wanted to retire as a Brooklyn Dodger. He was angry that the team to which he'd been loyal hadn't even bothered to consult him on their plans to trade him. Without letting on that he intended to retire rather than accept the trade, Dad's agent made a deal with Look magazine. They got the exclusive rights to print my father's retirement story. In the January 1957 issue of Look, Dad announced his retirement from baseball. The Giants tried to get my father to change his mind by offering him more money. Dad turned them down. He accepted a job with Chock Full of Nuts in New York City. At home, we celebrated the news. Major League Baseball players spend 9 months of the year traveling, and we knew that if Dad retired, he'd be home with us more. So, as Dad prepared for life as a commuter, we imagined having him at home most nights in time for dinner. We liked the idea. The picture on the bottom of page 50, the caption reads, "I was the middle child between two brothers, David and Jackie." This picture was taken for Look magazine in 1956. We were 4, 6, and 10 at the time. The picture on the bottom of page 51, the caption reads, "Dad's competitiveness was matched by our own when we challenged him to a game of Monopoly." And the picture on the upper right-hand side of page 51, the caption reads, "We were glad Dad wasn't going to be on the road so much, and he would be around for things like trips to the candy shop." Turning to page 52 and 53. Dad exchanged his Dodgers uniform for a corporate suit and tie in the winter of 1957. He became vice president of personnel for Chock Full of Nuts. Like lots of other fathers in Stanford, Dad left home each morning at 8 and returned most nights by 6. Not being on the road meant he had time to give motivational speeches, write newspaper columns, raise money for civil rights organizations, join protest marches, speak to youth groups, play golf, and cut the lawn. Dad also agreed to chair the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People Freedom Fund Drive. As NAACP chairman, he traveled around the country raising money for the nation's oldest civil rights organization. The first year of his tour, he helped raise more than $1 million. Dad joined a group of investors and community activists to bring the first black-run bank to Harlem in New York City. They felt that a minority-owned and operated bank was the only way to help rebuild Harlem's predominantly black community. On January 4, 1965, Freedom National Bank opened on 125th Street. The picture on the upper left-hand corner of page 51, the caption reads, 1957, Dad retires from baseball. The picture on the bottom of page 52, the caption reads, On special days, Dad took me with him to New York City. Our first stop was always his office at Chock Full of Nuts. There are four pictures that dominate page 53. And the caption reads on the bottom, My father helped raise money to support the sit-ins and demonstrations against segregation. He participated in voter registration drives, NAACP campaigns, gave speeches, and worked in politics. Turning to page 54 and 55. On January 23, 1962, my father learned that he'd been elected into the Baseball Hall of Fame on the first round. He was happy and excited. There was a flurry of activity that led up to the July induction ceremonies in Cooperstown, New York. I was 12 at the time, and not quite sure what all the hoopla was all about. I asked my father what it meant to be chosen for the Hall of Fame. He said it was like being named to the Supreme Court if you were a lawyer. I got the point. Dad's Hall of Fame induction was wonderful. Both my grandmothers were there with us, along with Branch Rickey and many others who had helped my parents throughout my dad's baseball career. Dad was the first African American inducted into the Hall. When he was presented with his plaque, he spoke with such pride. I was so happy to be a part of this big day. The following year, we hosted the first of many jazz concerts at our home to raise money for the civil rights movement. The 1963 concert was a fundraiser for Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s organization, the Southern Christian Leadership Committee, SCLC. The picture's on page 54 in the upper left-hand side. The caption reads, July 23, 1962. My father is inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame, which honors some of the sport's greatest players. My mother, as always, is by his side. Election to the Hall of Fame isn't a popularity contest like the All-Star Game is now, where admission is determined by the fans. Players are voted into the Hall of Fame by the men and women who study baseball players and write about them. Negro League players, however, went unrecognized until Satchel Paige was inducted into the Hall in 1971. The picture on the bottom of page 54, the caption reads, As children, our early experiences got us hooked on social activism. I will never forget the excitement of having Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. visit our home for a fundraising jazz concert for the civil rights movement. We also joined our parents in civil rights protest marches in Washington, D.C. The picture's on page 55, on the bottom in the middle. In 1964, my father left Chock Full of Nuts to campaign for New York's governor, Nelson Rockefeller, who was running for president. The picture in the upper right-hand corner, the caption reads, In addition to being a businessman, entrepreneur, and activist, Dad was a radio commentator for NBC and several local stations. He also wrote newspaper columns. Dad loved to talk and debate issues. And the picture on the bottom right-hand side. My father encouraged other athletes to lend a hand with the civil rights movement. Boxing champions Floyd Patterson, and Archie Moore, along with baseball star Curt Flood, joined him. Other professional athletes stayed away from the civil rights movement and politics. This troubled my father. He once asked, "Is there a medal anywhere which is worth a man's dignity?" Turning to page 56 and 57. During the 1960s, Dad wore many different hats and faced many new challenges. The biggest challenge was his health. Shortly after he retired from baseball, Dad found out that he was diabetic. His health problems became more and more serious. Dad was only in his 40s when he had his first heart attack. By his late 40s, his diabetes had left him partially blind. Still, the last 7 years of my dad's life were filled with politics, business, family, friends, and golf. During that time, I married and attended Howard University College of Nursing. My brother David completed high school at Mount Hermon, Massachusetts, and went on to college at Stanford University. Mom taught nursing at Yale University. My older brother, Jackie, fought in Vietnam, received a Purple Heart, and then died tragically in a car accident when he was only 24. Despite our shock and pain over losing our beloved Jackie, we rallied as a family for what turned out to be our last year with Dad. That year was 1972. It was also the 25th anniversary of Dad's breaking the color barrier. In addition to special times together as a family, we celebrated Dad receiving a number of tributes. The final one took place on October 15, 1972. Dad threw out the first ceremonial pitch during the second game of the World Series in Cincinnati, Ohio. A record crowd was in attendance. An estimated 60 million people watched the ceremony on television. All Major League Baseball teams were now fielding black, white, or Hispanic players. But the diversity stopped there. There were no non-white executives, managers, or general managers in professional baseball. So, Dad felt it important that he use his last public address to remind us all that equality was an ongoing struggle. "I am extremely proud and pleased," Dad said in his World Series speech, "but I'm going to be more pleased and more proud when I look at that third base coaching line one day and see a black face managing in baseball." In addition to his many achievements in sports, my father was awarded the highest honors from civil and human rights organizations, religious groups, and the United States government. From the NAACP's Spingarn Medal to the nation's highest civilian award, the Presidential Medal of Freedom, my father's accomplishments on and off the field have been widely recognized. Dad spent his entire life fighting for equality. He won some battles and lost others. He made some mistakes, but he also inspired millions. My father never lost hope or gave in to despair, even when his health failed him. He once said, "A life is not important except for the impact it has on other lives." Dad lived his philosophy. The picture that's on the bottom of page 56, the caption reads, "Mom, David, and I stood proudly beside Dad at the 1972 World Series. Dad's message was heard worldwide. My mom said, Jack fought tirelessly for social justice and equality of opportunity for all people. He even ventured into hostile territory, seeking to understand the complexity of issues dividing the United States. In doing so, there was always the risk of being rejected and misunderstood. The picture in the upper right-hand side of page 57, the caption reads, April 15th, 1997, President Clinton, my mother, and Major League Baseball Commissioner Bud Selig celebrate the 50th anniversary of Dad breaking the color barrier. And the bottom picture on page 57, my father helped change America. This lifetime of service continues to inspire. Turning to page 58 and 59, we buried my father on October 29th, 1972. In his eulogy, the Reverend Jesse L. Jackson reminded us that no grave could hold this man down. More than 2,500 mourners watched as six former athletes, Boston Celtics star Bill Russell, Dodger teammates Don Newcomb, Joe Black, Junior Gilliam, Pee Wee Reese, and Ralph Branca carried my father's silver-blue coffin draped in red roses out of New York City's Riverside Church. After the service, people lined the streets to pay their final respects as Dad's casket passed through Harlem on its way to the Cypress Hills Cemetery in Brooklyn. It was one of the saddest days of my life. It took years for the pain and sense of loss to dull. But Dad would have expected us to stay in the game of life and to meet each challenge with strength and compassion. That's been my promise to him. In 2002, my son Jesse helped pay tribute to my dad as part of Major League Baseball's Memorable Moments campaign. At the 73rd All-Star Game in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, my son reenacted my father's first moments as a Major League player. Jesse, wearing a replica of my dad's famous number 42 Dodgers uniform, stepped across first base, paused, hands resting on bent knees, eyes serious. At 24, he was 5 years younger than his grandfather had been when he broke baseball's color barrier. As the announcer played out the dramatization, he introduced my son to 43,000 cheering fans. Mom and I sat proudly watching from the baseball commissioner's box as Jesse, who is two generations removed from the moment, accepted this profound yet brief connection to his grandfather. We'd raised my son with stories and pictures of my dad's achievement, but at the same time stressed the importance of defining life on your own terms. As we observed the confidence Jesse displayed that evening, we knew how far he'd come toward creating an identity separate and distinct from his grandfather. And that's the challenge. It's taken me many years to understand and celebrate the fullness of my legacy. In achieving understanding, however, I've been both inspired and given a sense of direction that's enhanced who I am. At the same time, I've had the freedom to create a life of my own. Looking at the picture on the bottom of page 58, The caption reads, "A sign of mourning for my father." Looking at the picture on the upper right-hand side of page 59, the caption reads, "Jesse Robinson Sims at the All-Star Game." And the picture on the bottom right-hand side of 59, the caption reads, "New York Yankee Derek Jeter is one of the many players who have joined me in breaking barriers. Through our work, we help children face obstacles in their lives." Turning to page 60 and 61. Each year, children across the United States select Jackie Robinson for their National History Day projects. And through their exploration of the man, they too adopt a piece of him into their lives. In Major League Baseball parks across the country, my father's number 42 is retired and proudly displayed along the outfield walls as a lifelong symbol of his legacy. Across the country, there are organizations, programs, schools, parks, community centers, and other facilities that bear my father's name. But perhaps our most significant family legacy is the Jackie Robinson Foundation. It was founded by Mom and several close friends in 1973, the year after Dad died. Through the Jackie Robinson Foundation, we strengthen young people by providing education and leadership development opportunities, with the expectation that the path selected by each student will include giving back to their communities. More than 30 years after his death, Jackie Robinson Foundation scholars remain a living tribute to my father. Today, 1,000 graduates of the program are in the world making significant contributions in the fields of their choice. Each graduate is unique and special. Each understands that family and career are only part of their work as an adult. They've all been trained that volunteerism is a lifelong commitment and that they must remain engaged and active in an ever-changing world. And the picture that encompasses both page 60 and 61, the caption reads, "Bill Cosby, who's in the center, is a major contributor to the Jackie Robinson Foundation." Here he poses for a photo with the foundation students and alumni. Turning to page 62 and 63. And so, the ranks of dedicated young leaders and followers committed to building a vibrant, productive, and richly diverse world are growing. The steps to forming such a society begins in childhood. It starts with making a promise to yourself, your family, and your community to be the best that you can be, so that when you're presented with the opportunity to lead, you'll be ready to assume your role. Many years have passed since my father died. I still miss him terribly, but have found ways to continue to celebrate his life. Dad kept his promise to America, yet the struggle for equality continues. It is my hope that future generations will embrace the challenges of a global society and find creative ways to challenge systems that are unjust. Pictures on page 62 in the upper left-hand corner. My brother David, as the caption reads, lives most of the year in Tanzania, East Africa. But his coffee farming business brings him to New York several times a year. He is married and the father of 8, so we're blessed with a large contingent of Robinson children of varying ages, personalities, and offerings. On the Bottom left-hand side of page 62, caption reads, Mom, David, and I continue to pass on the lessons we've learned about life to all our children, those born into the family and those embraced by the family. Over time, we've seen this commitment bear fruit in many ways. And on the bottom of page 62, near the center, in the caption reads, In 2001, Michael Jordan received our Robbie Humanitarian Award. And page 63, full page picture. And the caption reads, Through their words and actions, my parents taught me the importance of keeping promises. And that concludes the story entitled Promises to Keep, How Jackie Robinson Changed America by his daughter, Sharon Robinson.